Welcome to the Pastor and Intern Podcast. My name is Eric. I'm the pastor on the podcast. I'm here with Will. Will, how's it going?
I'm doing great.
You're doing good?
I am. I'm doing good.
You've not got the virus?
No, not yet.
Okay, good.
Not Jenna, that I know of.
Jenna, how are you?
As good as I can be during these times.
Yeah, I know. It's such a weird time to be alive. It's weird.
It really is. It's a very different.
So I know you have like an itinerary to get into, but
sure.
So I want to say something real quick.
Go ahead.
See what y'all's opinion is. So I don't know what the research is going to show. So I don't know what the research is going to say today, because I'm guessing, isn't today the 15th today?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Is it not?
I don't think so yet.
Don't.
It may be,
no.
But I don't.
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is too.
I don't know.
Okay, so whatever day it is. So if it shows that the curve has been like mashed down, would it make sense for us to practice some other forms of distancing all the time? And one in particular that I saw that I think would be weird, but I think that might help. What if we, during seasons of the flu or a virus or whatever, what if people had masks to wear and you wore your mask whenever you were in public for like a month? What do y'all think about that?
So you had to wear a mask.
For like a month. Yeah. So like an advisory would go out and said, hey, get your mask out. You're going to wear it from this date to this date. If we extend it, we'll let you know. But the flu's really hit hard, so wear this mask. What do y'all think about that?
Well, I would wear it, I guess.
Would you?
I mean, if they encouraged us to wear it.
I kind of think of it from the point of view in like Japan. I don't know about other Asian countries, but you know, a lot of time over there, especially like Japan, you'll see a lot of pictures of them wearing them, not just now because they're obviously wearing them now, but like out of, they're all about respect over there. And if they themselves are sick, they wear the mask to keep themselves from giving it to other people.
Sure. That's what I'm saying. Isn't it more of like you wear a mask if you are sick and not to
But everybody
from being
here
sick?
Does the opposite.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. I'm just asking.
Everybody here is like, oh, I'm aware so I don't get sick. And it's
right.
Like,
that's the opposite.
I mean, it reduces your chance, but you're, I mean, touch things and then touch the mask
right.
and take it off at some point, you're still going to get it.
Right. Yeah. You tell them, Jenna.
Yeah. Well, I just don't know that we would do it, personally.
No, probably
people
not.
People are so stubborn, they wouldn't do it.
Well, I think it's an American thing, like where we're all about, you know, the man's not going to tell me what to do. I'm gonna go right. do whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
And that's literally how we've been since we rebelled in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think that's never changed. We're like, well, we're America. We'll do whatever we want. And I think it would be hard for us to transition into something like that, personally. Because I don't know. I think I would do it, but I would forget it all the time. Like I'd be like, oh, junk.
It's
4:30
and I haven't
wore it one time.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like maybe like closer to our ages, like younger generations would take it seriously and do it. But it's like a lot of the older ones would never do it. So it would be like we would all have to, and our kids would all have to grow up doing it to make it the norm.
Right. I think that's true. It would be something we would have to do for years and years and years for us to actually do it. But I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. I read that.
What about gloves? Would you wear gloves all the time?
Oh, gosh, probably not. I have fairly big hands. It's hard to find a glove that fits my hands.
Because I just don't know. I think, it's like you said, Jen, I don't know that really is going to...
Gloves are so much, they're so annoying.
I know.
Yeah, you can catch anything, because it's like, what, respiratory droplets is how you catch it. So anytime anybody sneezes or coughs or even just speaks,
touches a table.
Yeah, you can get it from there.
Even if you have gloves on, you can still touch your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, think about how much you touch your face in a day.
I'm so bad about touching my face. Lately, I've had to really, like, pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Be like, don't do it.
Don't touch your face.
Me at the gym, I look like an insane person because I'm just like, like, my hair is in my face or I'm sweating or something. I'm just like, using the top of my shirt to try and wipe it.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Yeah, I've been washing my hands and sanitizing my hands more than I ever have.
My hands are so dry.
In my entire life.
From washing them.
Like, it's just...
I'm so tired of
I'm done with
you
it.
Y'all own a little small hand sanitizer?
No, I don't.
Germex thing? No.
I use it when I'm at work a lot because we live with some very clean individuals here at First Baptist Church.
Yes,
and so they have that
kind
of stuff
way. Yeah.
Everywhere.
All over
there.
The place, yeah.
Like, you walk in and they're like here, and you're like, oh, okay. And you take it and you wipe your hands.
You've got to like okay. do three.
Which
of
they
them.
Should. I mean, they're doing the responsible thing.
Yeah.
They're doing the responsible thing. So,
yeah.
Anyway, sorry to hijack your your schedule.
Well, it leads right into the. So, obviously, we're still dealing with the virus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trump last night extended the. So, it was originally this 15-day order. He's now extended it through the end of April, so yes. April 30th.
So, 30 plus more days.
Yeah. No. And I don't know if we talked about it. I don't know if we talked about it yesterday on the podcast. Not yesterday. Last week. It feels like yesterday. On the podcast, but how he wanted to open things up by Easter. Right.
Yeah.
He was really, and I don't know if he even has done that yet. I don't know if it's been less than a week or not.
It's been less than a week, I think.
Well, he's been trying to make a big push to push things or open up the country on Easter, right? He's looking at the economic side of things. So let's start there. Obviously, now the economy and things are not going to be open back up on Easter, mm-hmm. right? So churches most likely will not be open back up on Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all know that Easter's a pretty big day in the church life, right?
Yeah, it's like obviously, one of the two that we
right,
really
right,
hit on.
Right, and obviously for theological reasons, right? Jesus
yeah.
rose back from the dead. It's
yeah.
a pretty important thing.
That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, but also logistical, other types of... I mean, it is probably our biggest high attendance Sunday, mm-hmm. right? Other
yeah.
than Christmas.
Christmas.
So do you think, on the top of your head, what are some significant things that are going to happen or maybe... be or not happen or whatever because we're not meeting on Easter now and actually gathering together in a large group. Do you think that's significant in any way for the churches? Does that not matter?
I mean, I think it matters, but I think I would be really interested to see if the SBC has any sort of record as to when was the last time the church didn't meet on Easter. I think that would be
yeah.
an interesting stat to look at because I bet it's been...
A while.
Probably so.
Probably 30 or 40 years
yeah.
whenever the last thing hit. And then even then it would have to be at this time, the last time a virus hit or something like that. I think it's a big deal. It may not be a big deal to someone that doesn't go to church, right? But I think to us church folk, I think it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Well, and then we were in staff meeting last week, and the guy that deals with older adults, he was talking about how he had been a part of the prayer service that morning for the last, how many years did he say, 10 years?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and they can't do it. Like, they just, now some people probably show up because they're stubborn, sure. But I think, though, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, like you said, it's one of the two holidays that we really get behind and say, hey, this is why we celebrate this holiday.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Jenny, you got anything to add? I think,
not really.
I think as well, so you made a good point, right? So it's a good opportunity for the gospel to be shared, right? There's going to be a lot of people mm-hmm. there. Families come, a lot of different people come who don't normally come.
Sure.
So that's an obvious point, I think. But also maybe for giving, I think there may be the giving, and I don't have any statistics to prove this, so I could be completely false, but I wonder if the giving kind of spikes at Easter
mm-hmm.
because we have more people there. Maybe they tithe and give, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's significant in some way.
I do kind of feel like it would be interesting to see, like, if there is a way to see, you know, numbers-wise, how many people are watching, like, online.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be interesting to see, like, what churches do online for
yeah.
Easter, because I honestly do feel like more people are willing to tune in on Easter morning, because it is part of their routine for Easter.
Yeah, I guarantee you're right. I would say more people probably would.
I mean, would you say 300 or 400 more people would watch?
Ooh, I don't know that I'd say that much, but...
But I mean, you would say that more people, and you can correct me, but there's more people that watch our Sunday services right now, or for 10 seconds or whatever it is, than actually come. Is that...
Sure.
Is that facts?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if that's the facts, then... Is it too?
I don't think so. I think, well, and you may have a good point. I mean, there may be more only because they don't have to actually come.
Exactly.
They don't have
to show up.
Right.
And
then they can
grandma.
Sort of pick and choose where.
I'm just saying, you know, like I know that people that don't come to church are invited by either their grandma or their mom, and they come and they sit with them. You
right.
know, it's kind of like Mother's Day.
Right.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is like a mini Easter to these people.
Sure.
You know.
So let's move on, but maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more when it's actually the week of Easter.
Oh, yeah.
Is that next week?
2 weeks.
I think that is.
2 weeks.
Oh, is it two weeks?
Away.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's
I
not
guess we are
Sunday.
Still in March, right?
Yeah.
What's today?
The first
it's
Sunday
like
in
two
April.
2 more days.
Is today the last day? So it's not the last
Tomorrow's
day of March?
Last day
Tomorrow's
March.
Last day of March. Okay.
Will has lost all concept of time.
I know. It's all gone.
No, but seriously, I feel like most people's lives are slowing down because they're at home.
Yeah.
But my life,
it's gotten a lot
has
faster.
Gotten.
I feel like it's crazy that it's about to be April.
I feel like it's 8 o'clock when I get home. That's how I feel.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. So you asked the question last week, are our lives any different?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a week now. Are they still the same, like you said last week, or are they any different, any more different now? I would say mine's probably the same. I mean, we're just busier again.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we've
is that
added,
any different for you?
Here at church, we've added a couple things to put online.
Yeah.
I think even video recording this, putting it on Facebook is a...
Yeah, and we hope y'all enjoy that.
Yeah, it's a change. People are watching it, so
yeah,
maybe because they're bored. I don't know.
I don't really have anything different. The only thing extra I have going on is just anytime I come up here and do anything with y'all.
Yeah. And we appreciate that, by the way.
Yeah, we do.
It's about the only thing I got.
But yeah, my days are packed.
Yeah,
I go to the gym every day, but I feel like that's about to get stopped too. And then my world's just going to collapse.
Yeah, and then you're like, what can I do? Well, and I was talking to Julia yesterday afternoon, and we were talking about, you know, I just need to be efficient with the time that I have. Like, I did it really well last week. So I spoke 3 different times last week, and I just don't think people understand the preparation that goes into that. Like,
you're right.
Because I take that super seriously.
Right, right.
Like, I'm not just going to be like, you know, we'll open the Bible and see what happens. Like, that's not me. Right.
Right? We're just going to wing it.
That's not me. I really dive deep into it and try to find some good stuff in there. Anyway, and so it takes a lot of time. And so knowing that I had to do it 3 times just takes a lot of time. And not that it's not worth it, but because it is, it's just that I would prefer not to speak 3 times a week. I'm not this week, praise the Lord. But I think, though, that makes my week go rapidly because I'll start studying at 1 and then look up and it's 3:30 and I'm like, oh, my goodness. I've been reading this book for
forever.
2.5 hours. So, yeah. Anyway. So
yeah. So we may talk about Easter again in 2 weeks or whatever.
Sure.
So big events are getting canceled, right? The Olympics have been canceled for this year.
Yeah.
Moved to 2021. Hopefully they can have it then. Surely we'll be out of this whole thing.
Yeah, we'll be out of it.
I really hope so.
But another event that deals especially with Southern Baptists got canceled.
Yeah.
Right? So the SBC convention got canceled this year, which I think is at least significant enough to note because we spent a whole episode last year.
Talking about it.
If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, right?
Yeah, we talked about it last
year. Yeah, we did. We talked about it and all the things that went on.
Yeah.
And that will obviously not happen this year because
the virus is
happening. Yeah,
tore things apart. It's crazy.
Okay, so because of this virus and the things going on, a lot of people have been out of jobs, right? Yeah. So there's been a lot of financial hurt from this virus. So the Congress and the... So when you say Congress, do you include... So does Congress include both the Senate and the House?
Yes.
Or does Congress... Okay, so it does.
I think so.
Jen over here is our...
She's the brains.
Okay, so Congress has approved, as well as the president has signed, a new bill.
Yep, sending people money.
It gets a bill, sending people money, right? The stimulus check. So families of four could get I think it's like up to $3,400, which is a good... I mean, it's a significant amount of money, right?
Yeah.
So for those of us who have not been affected by the virus, meaning financially wise, right? So we haven't stopped getting paid, things of that nature. While other people have lost their job, the money specifically really to try to help them. Is it the correct thing and ethically correct to take this money from the government still?
If you don't need it?
If you don't, you just haven't been affected as other people have.
Okay.
So what do y'all think? What are your thoughts?
Jenna, you want to go first? Yeah, he asks hard questions. Blame him. This wasn't my question. This is his question.
What do you think?
I mean, I don't necessarily think it's wrong because, I mean, it's out there to help everybody and it's the same opportunity for everybody.
Yeah. Okay. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think it's wrong.
Okay.
Because if it was the government saying, hey, we're going to send money out to everybody, and if you're not affected by it, you can send it back. I would be like, okay.
Like, who's going to send it back?
That's the first thought is like, so what do you mean affected? You know, it's like, well, my third cousin twice removed has the coronavirus.
Right.
And,
sure.
And it's weighed on me spiritually, so I'm going to take this money.
Yeah.
But I think that they've put it in a way that says, hey, this is for everyone, like Jenna said. And I think that, you know, they're giving you money, so... They're trying to help you.
I honestly feel like everybody's affected. So, like, even if you're still doing okay, you can still pay your bills and everything, you're still affected in some way.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, like me personally, I mean, my parents, my mom's a personal trainer.
Sure.
And the gym is probably going to get closed. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely affected by that. But on the other hand, like my dad's job is still fine.
Yeah.
For now. Sure. So we're still paying all our bills. It's still fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we kind of need it in our own life, in our own context, but at the same time, we'd be okay without it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, I think there's probably ways you can use it for good, right? I mean, you could give some of it away. You could give it to others who may need it more than you. I was talking to my mom about this, so shout out to her. She made a really good point. She said, well, it seems as if another reason that we're getting this money is to be able to go spend it in order to stimulate the economy mm-hmm. back growing.
Right.
Right. And I think that's a really good, point is that Trump's giving us this money because the economy's in the tank.
Yeah.
And he wants us to go spend it back into the economy to boost that back up. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think you can look at it in those ways. I don't know that if you take it, you're like ethically in the wrong.
No, I don't think so either.
Because I think you make a good point. I mean, who's gonna say no to money that you are given?
And also, I feel like you can look at it in the way of, you know, you could save it for now because, you know, this obviously isn't going to end anytime soon.
Sure.
Sure.
So, you know, you never know down the line your job could end up getting
shut
down or stopped for now. And then you need it at that point.
Then you need it. Yeah.
So
it's true. So, well, I think it's just, I think it's exposing a lot of some of the things that are wrong in the culture. So, for instance, I think most Americans, regardless of their own choices, are barely getting by on what they have.
Yeah.
You know, they're either in an apartment or they're in a house that they make the payment on. You know, that's their rent is the $700 or $800 that they make that month goes to that house or that apartment or whatever. But once you no longer have that job, it's not as though they have money in the bank. They probably have credit card debt.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, right.
So you know what I mean? So I think it's exposing a lot of problems that we have, especially financially and with money and things like that. Because I have a hefty mortgage payment, but I have a avenue to where I can pay for that. But there's a lot of people that don't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of these, like you said, it's kind of showing a lot of problems that we have had, but our economy's been so good that it's been fine.
Yeah.
But now that this virus has wrecked everything, it's kind of tripped us up. So, but I agree with you. I love that point that you made. Like if you're really well off, so if you have thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in the bank, you should probably give that money away.
Yeah.
Like,
and I'm not saying you have to give all of it, but you could. It's probably you could use it for other things.
Yeah.
Again, I think the main point of getting it, I mean, is obviously to help the Americans, right? That's the great thing to say.
Sure.
But I think a lot of the point is also to sort of get the economy back going. And that's his whole point is, hey, this is great. I'll give you money to pay your bills so that we can get this thing going. So, but I think, like you said, you can give it to wherever, whoever needs it, things of that nature. So
side note to this,
and
this may be a controversial question, do you think that, and again, I don't know that this is what's happening, but do you really think that Trump is going to lose this election?
Do I think Trump's going to lose this election?
I don't think he's going to lose.
Because think about it. He's handled this virus really well.
Yes.
Okay, so number one, he's been really presidential, which he's not known for doing, right? So he's more known for getting on Twitter and trolling people, right? Like that's the facts. Like there's nothing, you can't dispute that. You can go on his Twitter and like do one scroll and be like, yep, and then close it because you know... Like, yep, that's it.
Sure.
So there's that, and he's been really presidential. And two, it's not just him. So he has a team of people behind him that aren't just like these heavyweight politicians and army generals. He has those. But it's also experts that are with him. Like, what is that doctor's name? Is it?
There's Dr.
Fauci.
Is
it Fauci or Fauci?
Fauci, and there's Dr. Birx.
Yeah.
Robert Birx, who's with him.
And that Fauci guy is... He's a boss. Like that guy, he knows what he's talking about.
Who's he gets with? Up there. He's with a disease, something about disease and infectious diseases or something.
Yeah. He's
with something.
He's a home run.
Yeah.
So he gets those people up to speak. So it's not him being the expert, right? Like Trump's not getting up there being like, listen, you know, like he's not the one doing that, right?
Yeah.
He's getting people that know what they're talking about. Because people like to put Trump up there and say, well, he's just lying to everybody, right? But if you get someone up there who's an expert, mm-hmm. who has nothing to do with Trump besides that he's on this team, it really gives people an insight. I really love watching it personally.
I do too. I try to watch all his little briefings that he does for the coronavirus stuff. I think he'll lose? Probably not. I think a lot of that.
Well,
also,
the story he just gave every American $1,200.
Money, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I think on the flip side of that, though, as well, is that, I mean, look at who he's running against, right?
So that's not
possibly Joe Biden.
I feel like in all this, too, it's kind of just bringing up the weaknesses of a lot of Democrats and things that are going on because, you know, they like to, they'll play their hand and blame it on him. But I think more and more Americans are seeing, you know, actually seeing what they're doing through all of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also, news networks have almost gotten to the point where they're not going to show his press conferences anymore because they view it as fake news.
Yeah.
Like, he views them as fake news. They view him as fake news. It's this really childish
type of art. He called two reporters out.
He
did. Was that with you?
Yeah, when we were watching it, and he was, like, calling people out. He was like, you know, you promote fake news, and so does him and her. And he pointed to the people, and I was like, oh, snap.
What?
Dang.
It's this childish type of behavior, like, well, nah, 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 and, like, pointing fingers. And I feel like at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if CNN was like, yeah, we're not going to show your press conference.
Yeah,
anymore.
I think the whole Easter April 12th thing was a little ambitious on his part, and I think he caught some mess for that only because people are like, this doesn't even make sense. It doesn't seem like we're going to do that. So that would probably be the only one negative, but I think – I agree with you. If he didn't bring up the actual doctors and things, then it would be a different discussion. But I think
he's done a really good job.
I think he's handled it well.
I think he's done a really good
job. And it's important for the American people to hear him say, hey, I care, and I want this thing to get back going for the good of the people.
Well, yesterday I was listening to him on the way home, and I just barely caught like the end of it. He was taking questions, which is the best part of those interviews because people will ask the dumbest stuff. And he's just like, I don't know why y'all are trying to be so negative. People are dying, and there's so much death in this. We need as much positivity and as much moving forward together and being together as we can. And I thought, that's a really good...
Yeah.
I like that more than keep America great, right?
Yeah.
I think that's fine, you know, make America great again. I think that's all great. But, like, when he says things like, we need to keep everybody together and do this thing together, I really like that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I really like that. I can get behind that more than the MAGA... CAG stuff. Like, I don't identify with that, but I do identify with, hey, let's get everybody together and move forward together.
But then you got people being like, he's not taking it seriously.
Exactly. And it's like, what are you talking about?
You'll never get both.
What?
No, you won't.
But we do not support everything President Trump does.
Well, no.
Right?
Well, no.
We love our Democrat friends.
Well, yeah. And I'm not saying that I'm a Trump lover because I'm not. Okay. So for me to say that, it doesn't come from a place of Trump love, right? Like, I think I like him. He's our president. You respect the office,
right? Yeah, exactly.
No matter who's there, you respect it. So
exactly.
So you got to brag on him when he does good, and I don't. And I also, just to be on the soapbox,
get him.
I don't believe in bashing the president. I don't care if it's – now, if you want to make fun of him, that's fine. So, like, when people used to make fun of George W., that was the best TV. Like, if you go watch Will Ferrell do George W., it's the best thing I've ever seen. Like, he does it so well. And he kind of looks like him. It's weird. Anyway, but with George W., Obama, Trump, like, I think the satire stuff is funny. Like, that's great. But, like, there's no reason to make fun of and try to hurt people.
Yeah. I mean, you can disagree. There's nothing wrong with,
right.
with kindly disagreeing with people.
Yeah. And I just think that
it is the president. You do need to respect them.
Right. No matter who it is. No matter if you agree with them or not.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's been a real turnoff to me with these late night shows like Jimmy Fallon and Stephen Colbert and stuff, because I think they're both super talented. Like, they are super talented individuals, and yet they settle for the cheap laugh of targeting the easiest target in America, which is Donald Trump, instead of being creative and funny. So anyway, that's just my little rant about that. Respect the office, bro. Do it. Do it.
You tell them. Okay, so anybody got anything else to add about the news? Anything you've heard the past week? Interesting?
I don't think so. I think
no. Jenny, anything? No. I mean, it's pretty much just the coronavirus at this moment. Pretty much.
And I thought we'd have run out of stuff to talk about, but I feel like every week there's something new. And
there's something else.
New facts and charts. Oh, I'll say one more thing. Have you seen the meme that's like people that look at charts? Julia was telling you about it.
Yeah.
Where it was like people that look at charts on the average, like they look at like statistics, and it was like January, February, it was like a line that was going up, and then in March it just shoots straight up because of the coronavirus, because everyone's trying to like Google and figure out what's going on in the world. I thought that was interesting.
That's
like nobody cares about the statistics until everybody's dying. Then they really care about the statistics.
So. Is it like a true? I mean, is it?
I don't know. But
okay,
I think
so
there's.
They actually done,
I think
like, research
it's funny.
On it?
I think it's no. I don't think they have. But I think it's funny, and I think that someone's made an image of it is just hilarious. But there is some truth.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure more of that.
We'll spend a whole week last week making graphs.
I did. It was, yeah.
We'll and it was good work. It's good work.
Appreciate
and
that.
And I'm not kidding.
I appreciate
that.
That
was good work. Usually I'm being sarcastic, but that was some good work.
So you know what time it is?
Yeah, it's game time.
Yes.
That's what I say every time.
It's game.
And anybody asks me what time it is, I'm like, it's game time, baby. You know, no matter what we're doing. So what time is it?
So we're about to read out of the CSB Bible.
Oh, yeah? Do you like the CSB Bible?
I do. I'm a fan.
Okay.
I'm a fan. Can you tell us a little bit about the
CSB Bible? Yeah, so the CSB Bible, it's a great translation of the Bible. I've been reading the Bible for, let's see, I'm 30, 23 years, so I've been reading the Bible for quite a long time. And not any translation besides this one gets me coming back to it over and over and over again. So the CSB...
Not even the ESV.
No. Can you believe that? That he would say that on the air? Anyway, what if the CSB people are watching? And you just said ESV. Anyway, so the CSB is a dynamic translation that combines the readability of the NIV and the accuracy of the NASB and matches it together to make a beautiful baby called the Christian Standard Bible. It used to be the Holman Christian Standard, the HCSB, but they dropped the H, simplified some of the wording, and now we have this beautiful baby called the Christian Standard Bible. So I encourage you that if you're a fan of the podcast or a fan of any teaching that Will or I do, we use this thing.
Yeah,
so
we do.
If you,
it's a great resource.
You can find it. And if you don't want to go buy one but you still want one, we have a couple. So you can have one.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. See, that spiel would have been a lot better if you wouldn't have interrupted with your heresy. But it's whatever.
Wow, what if the ESV people are listening?
They don't sponsor the podcast. And they want to sponsor the podcast, I'll do a spiel about them too, but they don't.
We're sponsored by every Bible translation.
You mean the Calvinist version of the Bible?
Wow.
I said it.
Wow, just get them like that.
I have some good friends that are Calvinists, so there you go.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I just lost all train of thought.
You deserve it. From that ESV
comment,
you deserve it.
What was I about? I was about to say something. I have no idea what I was about to say.
Are we talking
Okay, so yes. Okay, yes, we are.
Okay.
So we asked last week, right, to mention topics and questions maybe you may have. And I do want to mention that again. If you do have any topics or questions or things that you have and you want addressed, let us know. You can text us, comment.
Because this is from someone.
Yes, so this is...
I forgot about this.
So the topic we're about to discuss is from someone whose name we won't mention because we didn't get their permission to mention it beforehand.
He's a good dude, though.
He is a good guy. So we're not going to mention the name, but this topic that we're going to talk about and finish, we can talk about however long we want to, is from someone. So we do look at them.
We do. Are watching.
Yeah. And this is a topic that's close to home. For me.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm all in, yeah.
It is.
I'm all in, sorry.
It is close to home for me. Okay, so anyways, so we're talking about singleness. But specifically, not just like the topic of singleness, but specifically singles within the local church.
Okay.
Okay, so how do we unite these things here and there? Okay, anyways.
Sure.
So let's look at 1 Corinthians 7, and we don't have to like exegete the passage.
Okay.
Unless you just want
to like
exegete
you to.
The...
I'd like you to.
No, not me. Oh, you can.
No, I'm okay.
I'm just going to... So this is a passage where Paul basically mentions that it's good to be single. So for example, in 1 Corinthians 7, verses 8 through 9, he says this, "I say to the unmarried and to widows, it is good for them if they remain as I am." And Paul is single, right?
Yes.
He keeps going in verse 9, "But if they do not have self-control, they should marry, since it is better to marry than to burn with desire." He keeps going...
A weird
phrase. But then to burn within desire.
Yeah, it's
desire.
A weird phrase, yeah.
It is. Do you want to explain to them what
no,
that
No, I
meant?
Don't. I do not. No part of me wants. Golly.
You do. And he basically, I mean, you can read the, I'm not going to read this whole passage here, but you can keep going.
Yeah.
All the way through 1 Corinthians. I'm trying to find another place to start. Verse 32, "I want you to be without concerns. The unmarried man is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord, but the married man is concerned about the things of the world. He may please his wife, and his interests are divided." How does that make you feel, Eric?
That sounds about spot on.
Paul just,
That's about right.
But he basically tries to control. He's saying those who are unmarried aren't worried about their family, aren't trying to think about their family, but they're more able to do the things of
the church.
The church, right?
Sure.
So, anyways, so we do see this idea in Scripture, right? Yeah. In the Bible. Yeah. I think Sam Alberry, who's a great resource.
Okay.
I'm assume you've heard of
him. I've heard of him.
So he's I'm pretty sure he is a guy who struggles with same sex attraction, but who is a Christian. Yeah. So he is single,
mm-hmm.
And he writes a lot on this topic. I think he just recently wrote a book. I say recently, maybe last year, Seven Myths of Singleness. He's wrote a lot on same sex attraction and then Christianity, how those two work together.
Sure.
And he does this. He says that there's three different types of singleness. Okay, and I like this. I think this is good. So he says the first type are those who are just not married yet,
mm-hmm.
right? So that would be most of your younger college-age students, those who are single and just not married. They plan to get married. So that's the first type of singleness. The second type of those who are single are those who have never been married. All right, so now you're talking about those who are fairly older, who've never been married and probably have no want or desire to get married. And then you have the third type, which is more prevalent today, is those who are single again, either through the death of a spouse, so they're either a widow, or through divorce,
mm-hmm.
right? So they're single again. So I think that's important for us to think that when we're thinking of singles, we're not just thinking of this one idea, but we're thinking of maybe three different types of singles. Those who are going to get married probably one day, but just aren't yet. And then those who are single again through divorce or death of a spouse, and then those who have just always been single. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, and the thing we can talk about is, A, do you think that in church life and churches in general, do we ignore singles in our congregations more, or do we have things for them, things of that nature? What do you see? Do you think we sort of push them to the side?
Are you asking me specifically?
I'm asking either one of you.
Okay.
What do you think?
No.
Now, obviously, let's make this note. So neither one of you are single, right?
No.
That's important as well.
Yeah, so we as we go this way and this way, we farther and farther away from the marriage concept.
Yes, way farther away.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think? What is your idea here?
Okay, to be fair.
Okay, be fair.
I like to be fair. To be fair, the majority of people that you talk to from a pulpit standard or a Sunday school standard are to married people.
Yes.
Because the statistics say that like 98.6, I just made that up, percent of people get married. They just do. Like, you're going to marry someone. That's why I tell students all the time. You know, don't worry about getting married. It's going to happen. So don't worry about it. You know, you should be concerned about it, but don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So to be fair to pastors and teachers, most people are married, and the Bible deals with mostly married people. Okay. So when Paul's writing or Jesus is talking or whatever, they're usually talking to married people. Peter was married, things like that. They're talking to married people. So in saying all of that, I think to be fair, most people are married, but I would also agree with the premise that we do often ignore singles unless you're a child or a youth. After you turn 18, there's really, and we talked about this before, there's really nothing for you.
Yeah.
Like if you don't live in a college town, there's nothing really for you. And that's a fact. Like, we can agree to disagree, but it's a fact whether you want to think it or not. Especially if you were to do a census? Is that where you see how many people live in America? That's what they're doing right now. If you were to do one of our church, okay, look at the people between ages of 18 and 30, and you will be shocked at how few people are in that age range. It's because they go to college or they move away to work or whatever. So there's not really a lot for them. But I think it's interesting that you say that there's three different types of single people, you know? And I think, though, it's harder to teach on singleness when it has to do with someone who's single again.
Yeah,
I think that's the hardest one to do. Because you can easily give hope to someone who's never been married, who's 19 years old. Hey, this is going to happen for you. This is what you should do in your singleness, right? This is what you should do. On the other hand, if someone's 50 and their spouse either has died or they've went through a horrible divorce, it's harder to put hope in front of them, right? You know, we can tell everybody that about Jesus Christ and Him saving your soul and Him being with you forever. He's the one companion you have that won't leave, things like that. Like, you can do that. But at the same time, there's no promise that someone else is going to come along for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And even if they do, the statistics say, well, if your spouse has died, the statistics are fairly good in your favor that your marriage is going to work out because you're 50 or 60. Like, you'll probably run into someone else who's 50 or 60 whose spouse has died or whatever, or divorced. Yeah. Anyway, but if you're divorced and you get remarried, you have like a 70% chance of getting divorced again. And then every time you get remarried, it goes up 10 to 15% that you will get divorced again. Anyway, so the statistics are out there. So it's harder to give hope to people that are that have lost their spouse or through death or divorce. So I would say yes, because we don't know how to give them hope. Or we're nervous about that because it's probably a nerve, you know, that we don't want to push too hard. And two, I just don't know that... I just don't know that that's something that pastors and teachers are good at.
Yeah.
Just to be frank.
Well, especially, I mean, a lot of your pastors and teachers are married, right? So that's not
something I would say the vast majority.
Right.
So,
So Jenny, you have anything to add there?
Not really. I mean, I've honestly just never really thought about, I mean, just this topic as a whole. I mean, because, I mean, me personally, I've never felt like singled out or not have a place because I was single. Mm-hmm. But I've definitely had like felt left out just because of my age. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Like you said, like the 18 to 30 range, there's not much for it.
Mm-mm. There's really not.
So I've just never really thought about it, of like the single aspect of it.
Right. And I mean, to defend our church a little bit, we're not in a college town.
Yeah.
Most people go off to college.
Right.
And so.
And we're talking about churches in general.
Yeah. We're talking about churches in general, not just ours, just people in general. Yeah. Because you can put on programs and stuff for them. But at the end of the day, it's such an up and down thing.
That's my next question. So what can you do for singles in your church? And let's split this, okay? So I want to hear it from like a pastor standpoint. So like what you as a pastor can do for the singles, mm-hmm. and then what you as maybe just a church member could do for the singles, okay? And I know yours is going to be a little bit more difficult than his, so we're going to make him go first.
Yeah, oh gosh.
And I'm going to back you up on your answer.
I don't know.
Okay. So you go first. So what as a pastor can you do for singles within your church?
I think as the pastor, you have to be the local expert on this issue. So
on singleness?
Yes, because okay. I think even though, and this just came to my mind, even though I'm married, I try to keep certain things from my wife that have to do with the church. Let me tell you why. We go to the same church.
Yeah.
We're both church members. And the ugly that I see from the church, I don't want her to see that. Not that she doesn't know that it's there because she's a smart person, right? But that doesn't need to affect the way she views someone. Or if someone says something ugly to me, I don't want her to think less of that person because they said something ugly to me. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah.
So I deal with a lot of issues by myself, right? And I can't imagine how that would feel if I was 50. Does that make sense? And I didn't have anybody. And so I think pastors have to be the local expert on how to deal with that issue. Because, again, you know, I always come back to you teaching about marriage and youth, which is always brings a smile on my face. But but I think, though, that it tells us that the Bible is the authority, not us.
Yeah.
So you have to be confident in that, and you have to be the expert. So you've got to do the research yourself. You know, no one's going to volunteer that information to you. They're going to be like, hey, you know, these are the statistics I found on singleness in the church. And I think number two, you've got to form some sort of group.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. I agree.
And this is not speed dating. Okay.
Right.
That's not what this is. This is a group.
Yeah.
Because that's the temptation, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, well, maybe these people will just marry each other. No, let's not do that. Right? Let's just get a group of people together. And again, it's not therapy, right? This isn't everyone to cry over their spouse, right? This is not what that is. There can be some of that, I think, but that's not what that is. This is a group of people that love each other that have been through something similar.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you said there was great. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think that in part there of there's going through something similar. So I think there's unique challenges.
Yeah.
For those who are single that are struggling with, right? Especially, I think, in this first, those just not married yet. Mm-hmm. Because we know that in what I just read to you, so Paul says, hey, stay single if you can, but if you don't have any self-control or you're burning with desire, then it's good for you to get married, right? So you're not living in sin or whatever.
Sure.
But that in of itself, trying to deal with that as a single person it's difficult, right? And you need people around you who are either A, dealing with the same thing, or those who have been there and are like, hey, here's how you're going to do this and things of that nature. So I think what you said is good about the groups.
I appreciate
that.
I
approve
that.
Yeah, good thing. Appreciate you have anything else or you're done?
No, I think I'm done.
Okay, so Jenna, as a church member, okay, and I know this is a little more difficult, what can you do for those who are single? And maybe not you now, but maybe you in like the future.
What can I personally do, or just like what could our church do?
So let's say you get married, have kids. You as a family, what can you do for? You have any ideas?
Ooh. See, I was thinking of it more of like, what could the church do?
Okay, so what can the church do? Answer that one then.
I mean, I was thinking, honestly, some of the same stuff that he said as far as like the groups. The first thing that came to my brain is just, you know, more people our age in, you know, that section or section of singleness where it's like you're just not married yet, but it's like you want to. You need somebody to kind of give you the guidance. And I mean, maybe in the future, me personally could, I don't know, have a Bible study group or something.
Sure.
You know, I do think it's important having like, you know, a group that can get together that's just singles, that, you know, you're all sharing the same difficulties.
Right. So. And again, it's not speed dating, right?
You're not doing that.
No.
You're not trying to marry everyone together.
Or even just have a group that's like just girls. Like, you know, split it up. Have a group of girls that are single, have a group of guys that are single.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That way it's definitely easier to connect with them and share the same difficulties.
Yeah, and it's good to connect the singles within the church, right? Because those who are single for the lifetime, right, or just those who have never been married, have a lot to give to those who are maybe looking in that way or whatever.
Sure. I think it's good for people to open up their homes to people, especially when they're married, to open up their homes to people that aren't married. Does that make sense? So in college, Julia had this family, and I'm close to them too, but had this family that brought her in almost every night of the week and ate dinner with her and talked to her about her life and about her getting married and what that looks like and things like that. And I think that really helped her. I'm not saying that she couldn't have done it on her own, but I think having that kind of resource is like leaps and bounds better than doing it on your own. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think, I don't know, and I don't think that that has an age range on it. I really don't. Like, if you know, for example, Julia and I invite over an older lady in our church who's single all the time for dinner, all the time. Like, that's just what we do.
Yeah.
And it's not because she's single. We just really like her. So there's that. she's pretty great, and we just like her, and we invite her over. But I think also that not only helps us, but it helps her. You know, number one, it's giving her something to do, right? Number two, it's giving her some people in her life that find value in her.
Yeah.
Right? And then number three, you find a mutual love of Jesus together, right? Mm-hmm. And you see what that looks like outside of the ordinary bounds of Sundays and Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Right? Because even though the people watching or listening, think about the last time you invited somebody over to your house for dinner that wasn't married just to have dinner with you and your family. Like, does that ever happen? I'm going to go with a no. I'm just saying, like, it's easy for me to go to Bear, right, and say, hey, we're going to invite your family over and we're all going to have dinner together. Right? And it's like all six of them come over.
Yeah.
And then there's three of us, about to be four. So there's like a, you know, we can't even do that now because of the government regulation, right? But that's easy to do because it's like, well, we'll have adult time. Like, you know, Charlotte can play with their kids, you know, and we'll have a good time. But it's different though when you start inviting people over that live in a totally different mindset, totally different life than I do. And it has nothing to do with feeling sorry for someone or pitying someone. That's not the feeling. The feeling is, hey, we're all part of the church, and we're to love these people regardless. And it just helps that I really love this lady in particular. So.
Yeah, well, so, okay, so that's what I was going to say with both of you. You exactly said what I was going to say. So I said, I think we need to rethink what a family is. So one of the New Testament images for the church, and it is a lot through the New Testament, is this idea of church as family. So we're all brothers and sisters in Christ, we're all a family together.
Yeah.
And that was going to be my suggestion. Other than the groups, I think the number one thing you can do for those who are single or those who are experiencing singleness for whatever situation they're in, is to not just have a group for them, but to invite them in your house.
Yeah.
Right? To invite them into the everyday. Because a lot of times, especially for those who are never been married or those who are single again, primarily through a death of a spouse, they don't get to experience that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Often, if not at all, right? They don't get to experience this idea of family within
yeah.
a house ever. And I also think it's a unique way that you can pour into them, encourage them, build them up.
Well, again, it's like evangelism, right? Like, you're not called to save anybody, but you're called to go and tell people about Jesus, right? It's the same thing when it comes to this type of thing. All you have to do is invite them.
Yeah.
It's up to them to come, right? You can't make them come, but you can say, hey, I want to invite you over Saturday night. You can eat dinner with my family. And odds are they'll be like, oh, I don't want to intrude, blah, blah, and they don't come. But if you keep inviting them, showing interest in
you
them.
You better be there.
All right. This is yeah. the last time. No, yeah. but seriously, all you have to do is do it.
Yeah.
And I think God honors that type of
I think you and Julie are good at that.
Like that. Hey, I appreciate that. But it helps, though, that we experience that ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, people that never have experienced it, it's going to be harder for them to do that. See, my parents and my family, we never, ever did stuff like that. Ever. But with this other couple, it happened weekly. Daily, almost, sometimes. Hey, why don't you just come over and eat this meal with us? We're going to have... And they would, like, put it off-putting as much as they could. Like, hey, we're going to have all this food left over. If you want to come over, it's whatever. And it's like, well, all right. Because you're in college, sure, and you're like, right. I'm poor. And you just go over there, you know?
I want food.
And it was really good food. And so it helps to have that type of experience. And I think the church as a whole, if everyone or a majority of families would dedicate themselves to doing that, I think we'd have healthier churches, and we would probably attract more people that are single without families. So,
I agree.
So there's that.
So I got another question.
Okay.
Okay. And this is we're towards the end here.
Okay.
So we don't have to necessarily talk about this too much, and this maybe can even look forward to next week. But do you think that those who are dating are also ignored, like those who are single, are also maybe ignored, like those who are single? Notice, through your whole conversation, you talked about those who are married. Mm-hmm. You never mentioned those who are dating.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do we think?
All right,
the top of your head, do we think?
I'm going to say that some of the stupidest advice I've ever heard about dating comes from the church, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Wow. You're just going to leave us there.
Because I feel like, and we don't have to go into it, because I really don't, but we focus so hard on morals and that in our relationships, then we focus on, hey, is the guy you're dating saved? Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, so I'm not trying to downplay purity, right? I really try not to do that because I think that's important, but it's not as important as knowing Jesus
Christ
as
your Lord and Savior.
But that's what I'm saying, though. When we speak to people who are in dating relationships, we're more apt to talk about sex than we are to talk about Jesus.
I agree.
And that bothers the mess out of me. When I was in high school, I was told, you know, don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex, right? Not, hey, your sexual life has to do with your own purity, which has to do with your relationship to God, and you need to keep that relationship as pure as possible.
Yeah.
That's more motivating than turning to me and being like, if you have sex, then you're garbage. Like that's literally what I heard growing up from the church. And I think that some of the dumbest advice on dating comes from us because we don't want people to, you know, have these sexual relationships, these deviant type relationships with one another, because we feel like that's the answer. Why do we stop all this behavior? It's like, well, let's attack the behavior. Okay, when has that ever worked?
Yeah,
in the history of the world.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing with like those who struggle with homosexuality.
Yeah,
you don't attack, or you don't attack. I shouldn't say attack. You don't address the homosexuality, but you address the deeper problem. I think J.D. Greer's the one who says that.
Yeah,
right?
Like you can't even deal with that yet. Until you get to the Jesus part of it. Because we just assume that everyone we interact with is saved. And that is not true.
Yeah.
That is not true. We are not all saved, okay? So I feel like some of the worst advice that I've ever gotten has been in a church setting.
I did not know that was a...
It's a pretty hot button issue for
me. I didn't know that.
But if you ask Matt Chandler, it's a pretty hot button issue for him, too.
It is. So. Okay, so you as somebody who is dating, do you think that... I don't know. Do you have anything to add?
What do you think about what I just said?
Yeah,
there you go.
I've never thought about it that much, but I mean, I do agree. That is the number one thing that comes up when it talks about dating. That, mm-hmm. you know, there's so much more to dating. Because, I mean, I feel like, you know, if you're dating somebody, at least me personally, I think the only reason you should date somebody is if you plan on marrying them.
Sure.
You know, I'm not going to waste my time just having fun and wasting all that time with somebody that I don't want to spend the rest of my life with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can kind of think of it in the aspect of, you know, preparing for marriage. If that is the right person for you, you mm-hmm. need to be thinking about marriage and going into that. So I feel like there's just so many other topics that need to be addressed and talked about other than just the sex part of it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
Again, it's important, but it's not the most important.
There you go.
So,
all right. Anything else to add?
I didn't know you were going to ask.
Are we good?
So.
I it's literally like the very end.
I probably came off.
I threw it right at the end.
Pretty unguarded.
Because I was thinking about the single thing. And I was like, you know what, though? I don't know that people talk about dating often either. A lot of times we make an idol out of marriage, I believe, and throw marriage in this.
Yeah.
It's just above, which I think. So let's end that way. I think it's important for those who are single, and even those who are dating, maybe, to know that just because you are single or dating, you're not missing, like, the good stuff of marriage, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what your life is, not just the absence of the good stuff of marriage, okay? Which is also something that comes from Sam Alberry. It also gives you more freedom and flexibility to serve the church in unique ways.
Mm-hmm.
So there's good things for those who are single, right?
Yeah, and I do kind of want to add, I feel like, too, whenever in church, a lot of people, like, whenever they'll preach on marriage and talk about marriage, I guess, you know, they don't really address the... Well, those of you out there that aren't married or you're single or dating, here's what you can take from this. I guess it's more of they preach on marriage and just expect you to take it and apply it eventually to when you are married or when you are dating, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. Anybody got anything else? Anybody got anything?
I probably said too much.
All right. Well, we are for the word, for the truth, and for the church. Thanks again for listening to the Pastor and Intern podcast.